About a minute left, but I wanted to ask you, you focused a lot of your research and attention on the role of incarceration in California specifically, the nation's biggest and most populous and prosperous state. Could you talk about that as well, the lessons from California?
Certainly. I think the major lesson I would like to share with our audience these last few seconds that we have together is that California was on a path to making what was a huge and bulging prison system to be bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's where the contemporary abolition movement in the United States took root. And we fought and fought and fought throughout urban and rural California, making common cause with labor unions, healthcare workers, faith communities, environmental justice activists, and others to denaturalize the notion that crime was the problem for which prison and punishment was the right solution. As a result of which, the number of people in California prisons is much lower than it was even imagined it could be in the year 2000 because of the work that abolitionists did. That work needs to expand, but we see victories in Los Angeles County where a plan to build multi-billion dollar jails was defeated after nearly 15 years of struggle.
Ruth Wilson Gilmore, we have to leave it there, but I want to thank you so much for joining us from Lisbon, Portugal, author of Golden Gulag, Prison Surplus.
Tuesday, May 5th has been dubbed Giving Tuesday Now, a day to raise awareness and support for struggling nonprofits across the U.S. On Tuesday, May 5th at 9 a.m., KBOO will host a Giving Tuesday special program featuring nonprofit organizers talking about their strife and triumphs through the crisis of COVID-19. Find out what's happening in your community. That's a Giving Tuesday special on Tuesday, May 5th at 9 a.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Next up is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. The time is 8 a.m.
Democracy is coming to the USA.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. It's kind of funky on the air here.
That's how I like it.
I want to thank everybody for sticking with us. I really appreciate it. I know that our quality of sound is not as strong as it used to be, but the other choice is all of us dying.
And the quality of our analysis is not as strong as it used to be either. So thanks, everyone, for sticking with us. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM. We've got a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, but I want to tell people the number to call, because we really can take calls. It's 231-8187.
That's right. I want to reiterate what you heard just before the start of the show. Today is Giving Tuesday, and thanks to the help of some generous supporters, every dollar you contribute to KBOO today is going to be matched one-to-one up to a limit of $20,000. So this is a huge opportunity today for the station to maintain its operations during this shall we say, unprecedented period in which we find ourselves. And this is important because this unprecedented period precludes a lot of things, including our traditional membership, on our membership drives.
You mean I can't beg and whine on the air anymore?
Joe, you can beg and whine anytime you want. That's what we've come to expect from you, man.
So
if you can find it in your hearts and in your pockets to make a contribution to this station, today is your day. You can make that contribution at kboo.fm. So, there's a lot to talk about today, Joe.
Well, yeah, there's so much to talk about, and I'm wondering where you want to start.
Well, I want to start following up on what we discussed last week, which is the partial and total reopening of several states' economies in the midst of a global pandemic.
Yeah, but money is more important than people.
Yeah, some people maintain that. No, let's make sure we're accurate. Money is more important than some people. So there's a wide swath of states running from North Dakota to Texas through the heartland of the country that have at least partially reopened their economies. There are three others that are planning to do so soon. And as you can imagine, these are predominantly red states that we're talking about reopening their economies, including all of the old Confederacy, with the exception of Louisiana, which, of course, paid a heavy price for remaining open too long and holding a Mardi Gras celebration back in March. So this is a case where the ideology of a given group of people is going to subject literally thousands of other Americans who may or may not share that ideology with sickness and death. I can't really think of a better way to put it than that.
No, I think it's absolutely correct. You may not be stark enough.
I may not be stark enough. I can get more stark. Would you like to hear some of that?
Sure, go stark.
Okay, so the New York Times recently obtained a document from the White House, which is essentially a change in the forecast of projected deaths by the beginning of August. Now, I need to take a step back right now and mention that this model, the document that was obtained by the Times, the predictions it makes use a model developed by the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington. And that has been the bellwether measurement in terms of predictive models that's been in the most widely circulated use in the country for several weeks now. Now, based upon the actions of these several states to partially reopen their economies, the IHME at the University of Washington has revised upward its projected number of cumulative deaths by the 1st of August. That number is now around 135,000. That is more than double what it forecast on the 17th of April, when it estimated about 60,300 deaths. The administrators of this model specifically invoked the fact that the lifting of social distancing restrictions in some states is the cause of this upward revision in its mortality estimates. Here's a quote from the Institute. The revisions reflected, quote, rising mobility in most U.S. states, as well as the easing of social distancing measures expected in 31 states by May 11th, indicating that growing contacts among people will promote transmission of the coronavirus, to which most of the world replied, yeah, well, duh. So I want to go back to my earlier statement. Twice as many people are going to die because people in Georgia decided they really needed to go get their nails done and get a haircut.
Well, I need a haircut.
That's what we're talking about. Yeah, you need a haircut, but you know what? Suck it up, Joe. You're not going to get a haircut. And I think this is a...
You have a caller.
Well, I think that there's a quality in our system, seriously, which allows for an enormous degree of self-centeredness, of selfishness, in fact, which we take for granted. And we have much more stuff than we need, and we don't feel comfortable culturally unless we buy a lot of unnecessary, mostly unnecessary stuff. And for poorer people, it becomes even more difficult because their stuff is necessary and they face even harsher conditions. Poor people, persons of color, are really more threatened by this pandemic than I think you and I.
Yeah, right now, if you're an American of African descent, you're almost three times as likely to die from COVID-19 if you contract it than if you're a white person. And all of the reasons that that is true have to do with systemic racism and institutional discrimination over a period of decades and even centuries. But that is the topic for an entire different show. I want to touch on something you said, Joe, which is that the drive to reopen economies is rooted in a very basic selfishness that expresses itself in the American character. Now, what they're really talking about, these people from red states, when they're demanding to go back and get a haircut, they're not saying, I have the right to get a haircut. They're demanding that working people be forced to put their lives in danger to administer that haircut. That is what they are demanding.
Well, and I think there's another aspect to it which really reveals the evils of our particular capitalist system. The president is essentially saying, if you're a meat cutter, you have to keep cutting meat. And that meat is so important to the society. I suspect we eat much too much meat anyway. And that whole industry is very suspicious. And it was a suspicious industry way back in the days of the 1900. The fact of the matter is that industry is a very nasty industry. a very dirty industry, a very dangerous industry. It's always been that. And now, on top of all that, you're working hand in glove with people who are very likely one or two of them, perhaps three or 40 of them, to have the virus.
Yeah, it's really astonishing. Yeah, but Trump has said we've got to have our bacon. Bacon is essential to the American project.
Bacon.
So we must go forward with the bacon. I would counter that perhaps the American people introduce themselves to beans as a short-term alternative to more bacon.
Well, you know, beans are the musical fruit, man.
They are. They have a special accompaniment to our national tragedy going on right now.
Yes.
But I want to dig deeper into this vein we're on right now, which is this notion of selfishness and individualism being inbred into the American character. I want to direct your attention to a remarkable piece in The Atlantic, at theatlantic.com, by a guy named Ibram Kendi. You may have heard of him. He is an author and scholar, and his work really centers around anti-racism. He's written a book called How to Be an Anti-Racist, mm-hmm. which I think is seminal reading for white people who are interested in actually making this country work for everybody.
Yeah, I've read it. It's a good book. Good book.
It's a wonderful book, yeah. Very smart guy. But he writes in the Atlantic right now a remarkable article called We're Still Living and Dying in the Slaveholder's Republic. And in it, he talks about the difference in two fundamental drives toward freedom in the American people. One is the freedom to. The freedom to do what you want, the freedom to harm people in the course of doing what you want. This is the ethos of individualism. Here's how, I'm going to quote from the article now. Slaveholders desired a state that wholly secured their individual freedom to enslave, not to mention their freedom to disenfranchise, to exploit, to impoverish, to demean, and to silence and kill the demeaned. The freedom to harm, which is to say, in coronavirus terms, the freedom to infect. Slaveholders disavowed a state that secured any form of communal freedom, the freedom of the community from slavery, from disenfranchisement, from exploitation, from poverty, from all the demeaning and silencing and killing. The freedom from, which is to say, in coronavirus terms, the freedom from infection. And I think that perfectly encapsulates the dynamic we're seeing right now.
Yeah, and I have to say that the culture in embracing this very extreme, I think it's very extreme form of capitalism, states in Northern Europe and much of Europe, actually, and other places, have systems of mixed economy where there is indeed capitalism, but there is a social democracy that underlies, that in fact girds the needs and desires and necessities of ordinary people. We don't have that.
Yeah, all the other advanced economies figured out a long time ago that they needed to muzzle the business end of capitalism such that more people, in the words of Mr. Kendi, experience the freedom from all these repressive forces inherent in the system. America, on the other hand, has preserved that individualist ethos, deciding that it is intrinsic to whatever it is we do and whatever it is that makes us better than everybody else, which is, in a nutshell, the freedom to do as we like and not suffer any consequences for it. And if you're apparently a white person from Georgia or Alabama or Mississippi right now, that means the freedom to go get your haircut, whether or not that ends up killing your hairstylist. This is a deep, deep problem in our national psyche. And right now, we're going to see that problem measured in the thousands of dead bodies.
I think that's really important to understand. There's also an inherent value statement being made here. Business is more important than humanity.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But, you know, every one of these people who are proposing reopening states' economies so that people can do what they do, I'm interested. Among their circle of friends and relations, you know, most people have a broad social circle that maybe extends to, you know, 100 people if they're gregarious, okay? So I'm wondering which of those people, an individual in Georgia who wants a haircut, is willing to sacrifice for that haircut. Perhaps that ought to be something that people need to answer before they're allowed to go do these things. And perhaps, you know, volunteer to dye themselves, or perhaps volunteer to have their grandmother take one for the team. I think that would be appropriate.
You're being sarcastic, and I don't agree with you in the sense that maybe sarcasm is inadequate to the situation, because I actually think that the leadership at the White House at this time is in fact murderous. murderous of the American people and will turn toward any excuse for allowing this virus to continue its ugly path.
Indeed. And I think we need to mention in the context of all of these that these reopening rallies that have been taking place across the country have continued in the same old places and in some new state capitals. There's a demonstration over the weekend. There's also been much smaller scale ones in Salem. This is happening all over the place where folks are showing up demanding that the economies be reopened, demanding that working people die so that they can get a haircut. Now, there's something that connects the vast, vast majority of all these demonstrators, Joe. There's something that they have in common, something actually that might make you able to pick them out in a photograph.
What's that?
It's the color of their skin. These people are overwhelmingly white. And if you want to dispute this with me, that's fine. I would just refer you to any of the thousands of journalistic images and video footage that are out there of these demonstrations. These are white people, a lot of them heavily armed, and a lot of them engaging in behavior that's downright irresponsible, if not murderous. There are some particularly ugly pictures and footage out of Michigan, which show a line of stoic Michigan state troopers, their faces covered in masks, holding the line, literally imposing their bodies between an armed mob and the governor of the state of Michigan as they are demanding to be let in. Now, I ask you, Joe, in a group of armed people taking over a state house and occupying the spaces where legislation takes place, is that a peaceful civil demonstration, or is that an act of armed terrorism?
Well, I think it's an armed rebellion, and it should be. I mean, the important fact is the president of the United States, God help us, has actually encouraged this rebellion.
He has, over and over again. Even over this weekend, he was tweeting words of encouragement to these people. If I were the governor of Michigan, whose leadership has been exemplary, it must be said, during this whole crisis, if I'm sitting in my office and I'm hearing an armed mob outside the door chanting, demanding access to my office, and the only thing separating me from them are a bunch of state troopers putting their lives at risk, you know, I would be nervous. I would wonder if I could carry out the duties of my office. I would wonder if I was under looming physical threat at all times. Right? These guys are literally acting in armed rebellion against the lawfully elected government. That's happened one other time in the United States, and it did not end well.
Yeah, I really think that there's a historical attitude and a kind of deliberate, intentional ignorance involved in all of this. Like, I don't want to know about this disease. I want to have my job back, understandable in a way, but not really. Or I
well,
want.
Well, it is understandable. It is understandable. Right. Yet people are seeing their livelihoods disappear, and that's an existential threat. You know, I don't understand people. I don't blame people for being angry and fearful in that situation. I do, however, blame them for putting themselves and others at risk of dying to express their angst. That I have a problem with.
Well, and there's a structural aspect to this that's really important. The U.S. government could be paying people like unemployment insurance for their losses during this period of time. It would be expensive. It would could create a real crisis in our economy, but maybe an important one, and it could be done very easily if the President of the United States would not be weird fascist creature that he is.
I think this particular subject has less to do with Trump than it does with McConnell and his cohorts in the United States.
Well, yeah, there's by the way, there's an excellent article on McConnell in The New Yorker. I mean, this guy is really... He and his wife, a very wealthy woman from a very wealthy family, these people are really, I have to say, very scary and very evil.
Yeah, in fact, you could say that this period of American political history has been defined more by Mitch McConnell than by any other figure.
I think
arguably.
That's true. That's true.
Arguably. Anyway, so you mentioned unemployment insurance. Thanks to Bernie Sanders, The most recent round of federal coronavirus relief contains robust unemployment component that it's undeniably very, very helpful to a whole lot of people. But unemployment is really not the comprehensive answer here. It's valuable. It's appreciated. It's making the difference right now for millions of people. But What we need to do right now is emulate countries like Denmark, which are essentially saying to their workforce, we are going to pay you to stay at home, because that's how we get through this. We have been unwilling to take that step in the United States, and I think the reasons are grounded in what Dr. Kendi was talking about in the article that I quoted. We prioritize the freedom too, and that extends to the freedom of capitalists to exploit everybody else. We prioritize that over the communal health of our people.
That's absolutely right. I mean, that's what it's about.
That is a deep structural flaw in our society, and one that I mentioned earlier, we're going to see measured in the thousands of additional deaths.
It seems to me, and I'm sitting here at home in isolation, but it seems clear to me that many, many people are so, and it's not their fault, but it's a structural thing, ill-educated, irrational in their thinking about these kinds of problems, and aggrieved because the kind of economy we've had is not just an economy of stuff you can buy, but stuff you can buy well beyond the stuff you really need. And now we're being told, hey, it's not going to be going along like it used to be. You can't go to the men's shop or the ladies' shop or whatever and buy an extra pair of whatever ever. You know what I'm saying? And that is an anger that's deep and horrible. But it also is, unfortunately, a fact that working class people are out of work, and they are really financially and emotionally suffering.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And fortunately for many of them, unfortunately for the rest of us, Trump and the GOP have a ready-made ideological model for them to step right into.
Yep.
In which they can wrap themselves in a flag, pick up a gun, go down to the state house, and pretend that they're true patriots.
The whole concept of patriotism has been, in the last few years, totally perverted to the point where, you know, you got weird right-wing marchers in cities like Portland. You got strange, angry, mostly men, almost entirely men, enraged, some of them armed, and this is taken now as the new normal, and it's really, really frightening.
One thing that keeps coming up in conversations with my friends and family about these protests is, imagine if these people were black, or if these people were brown.
Oh, they'd get blown away, man.
They would be imprisoned, or they would be dead. I mean, it just makes you shake your head. When we eventually emerge from this, and we will, it's hard to see how we're not going to be a fundamentally changed country, either for the better or for the worse. And frankly, I can't really tell you which side I think we're going to end up on.
No, it's hard to tell. I mean, the situation, the political situation, the out front political situation, for example, the race for president and decisions about members of the Senate and the House of Representatives, all are unclear. All are tossed up right now. And we have a vast plan, clearly from the right, to disenfranchise as many people as possible in the coming elections.
Oh, yeah. Well, that plan's been in place for a long time now. And I know we have a caller standing by. So before we move on to the caller, I just want to add one bright spot amongst all this. And that is that there is a hero out there, a true patriot, who has taken images of the gun-toting protesters from Michigan and photoshopped onto them enormous, gigantic dildos in place of their guns. It is a thing of beauty, and it's out there. You just have to Google for it. I encourage you to go out and look. Because it'll put a smile on your face.
So, well, what would you look it up under? Dildos?
I'm going to leave that. We have smart listeners. I trust them to be able to use Google to find the pictures of the giant penis-toting Michiganders. Okay. Let's go to the phones. Who do we have?
Ann,
good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have 2 points to make. But first, I want to say your bright spot didn't help. And gentlemen, you scare me almost speechless. A report in the New York Times via a document released by the it's an internal Trump administration document.
Yeah.
Projects 3,000 deaths per day by June 1. and that we will go from adding 25,000 new cases every day to adding 200,000 or more daily by the end of the month. Now, Vancouver has 183,000 people. I don't know where, well, CDC numbers apparently, but it absolutely destroys coherent thought in my mind. That's issue one.
Oh, I agree.
Don't talk about it now. My other question that I've actually been trying to get to you for 3 weeks, if the Congress, whoever's responsible, does not fund the post office, what happens to voting by mail? In Vancouver, there's a place I can go drop mine. But what about the rest of the country? You talk about disenfranchisement. There's a good one for you.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad you brought that up, because there's a deep structural effort to destroy the public service of the post office. And it's really ramped up under this administration. And yet, the post office is one of the most efficient services ever offered, and it's one of the most egalitarian.
Oh, no, no, no. It favors Amazon. Don't you know that?
Oh, right, yeah.
And did you buy your bleach and your Lysol? You're going to need them.
I did, and I've been drinking it all the time.
Okay, and you've probably got a hole about, you know, waistband high.
Yeah. I just rigged up an IV drip. I kind of wheel it around with me all day.
There you go. There you go. Uh-huh. It's horrifying, and it's so multi-leveled, the complexity of the situation. You've got people dying because they're sick. You've got people dying because they're helping the sick. You've got people who are facing financial ruin. You've got people who think standing in a crowd without a mask, elbow to elbow, screaming so they can go play golfing and get their hair colored while carrying guns is a good way to behave. You've got people who don't know which way to turn. You've got a 70-year-old lady with diabetes who is a type O positive and would like to go donate blood but hesitates to do so because I live alone and can't afford to be sick by myself. I've got nobody to help me. What does one do to remain sane? And that's all.
Wow, that's a very good question.
It is a very good question. But part of what one does is, in the case of national politics, hold one's nose and vote against Donald Trump.
Honey, if Mickey Mouse were the Democratic candidate, he could not do any worse. I will be voting for whoever opposes Donald Trump. So you're preaching to the choir.
Okay.
Hey, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
You know, the caller raises a couple, two very, very salient points. And one is, we need to all work to get our heads around just what the consequences will be from these decisions to reopen state economies early. She was right. The model predicts 200,000 new daily cases by the 1st of June, 3,000 deaths per day by the 1st of June. This is a mistake of monumental proportions. And how do you stay sane in the face of it and everything else? That is a very good question. I really don't have a good answer. I think one way to stay sane is to maintain a rational framework about it all, although that in and of itself is enough to invite despair sometimes. Sometimes all you can do in a situation like this is the next right thing, right? What can you do? You can maintain your own social distancing discipline. You can make sure that you mask up and you glove up every time you need to go out of the house. You can make sure that you resist that temptation to pop over to your mom's house for just a few minutes. You can control your own behavior, and you can reach out and you can maintain and strengthen the ties that bond you to the people you love and to your community.
Absolutely. You know, I really like the idea of the 7 o'clock shout-out that's going on in lots of places and in a few neighborhoods in Portland.
I think it's going on here.
Well, it builds morale. It's symbolic, and that's all it is, but it is powerful.
Yeah. So the question, how do you maintain your sanity? Well, I mean, that's a recipe that each individual needs to figure out. But I think the things I mentioned are components of how you can do it. You know, and don't hesitate, you know, to find someone you like to talk to and who, you know, you find it helpful talking with, whether that person is a friend, a family member, a therapist. Keep that relationship going. Don't be afraid to lean on them. I think everybody understands that we all need a little more grace right now. Grace from ourselves when we're dealing with others, and grace from others when we have to deal with them.
A little help from our friends.
Right.
You have a caller.
I don't think, you know, I don't think your brother or your best friend is going to mind too much if you need to call up and talk about how troubling this all is for a little while, because chances are they're feeling the same way. So let's go back to the phones. Who do we have?
Brian.
Brian, good morning.
Hey, good morning. The woman that called a minute ago, boy, she did a good job of putting a lot of our thoughts, I think, at least mine, into words. How do we maintain sanity? It is so complex and overwhelming that it's just... And one of the big issues about sanity is, of course, we've been given the candidate slightly better than Mickey Mouse as a contender against the orange distraction. One of the things that really... trouble so many of us is now all this accusations against Biden about his things that he's done in the past with women. And I heard a show on the media. It's a really fabulous show to help understand the issues and how the media bends or reports on things. She had a woman on the show that I listened to last night. Rebecca is her name. I can't remember her last name. A journalist that was talking about how to think about his problems in this way, and it was really eye-opening. And as far as helping us stay sane, it really helped a lot. I can't go into details about it because I need to listen to it again, but on the first try, it really helped in dealing with the push-pull, you know, that you have when you think about Biden. I would highly recommend looking into On the Media, the show that they just played this week or yesterday.
Well, thank you. That's a good recommendation.
Yeah, really helps in the sanity department. Sometimes when you have people that can just put these things into words, like I can't, obviously. I really recommend On the Media. And a lot of their shows have been really enlightening about how... media works and some of the issues that we're dealing with.
Well, excellent. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the show. Bye.
You bet. Appreciate the call.
Are you taking a deep breath now?
I am, Joe, because, you know, the last two callers, you know, they brought up something that's real here. It's real, and it's something that, because of the peculiar circumstances we're all in, I think even more of a problem, and that is... How do you stave off despair? How do you stay sane? How do you keep yourself in a framework that can see a way out of this?
I just want to add one caveat. Despair is, and I am not a religious person or whatever, but despair is a sin because it makes you unable to act. You have to take on. You have to, even when you're not really sure you believe. You have to take on the value of the struggle itself and the potential for good social change. If you stay with that, no matter what setbacks there are, you will actually feel better. It's a psychologically advantageous position to take.
Yeah, indeed. You can sort of prime the emotional pump, as it were, right? You know, kind of get yourself into a better mood, and that will in turn, bring on further better moods. That's a challenge, though. I think that's a challenge right now more than any other time in living memory that I can think of.
Well, it is, and I am, for example, very concerned about what happens to kids losing school time. This is something you can't just magically make up. There are all sorts of issues that are coming to the fore that have never been appropriately dealt with in our system, and now they're really screaming for attention, in the midst of which we have a very bad leadership that is absolutely destructive of our culture and of our society.
Yeah, you're right. And the caller brought up something that's also a key component of all this. What about the Postal Service? The Postal Service is running out of cash and will soon be out of it. They have requested help from Congress, which was denied them. The president has expressed his disinclination to help the Postal Service, predicated on, as the caller mentioned, his mistaken belief that the Postal Service subsidizes Jeff Bezos and Amazon. But here's the thing. The Postal Service is in the Constitution. It's something we have to have. And in anything resembling normal times, the prospect of a president of the United States letting the United States Postal Service expire, letting it wither on the vine, that's unthinkable. What sort of rational society lets that happen? And of course, the implication for states like Oregon, as the caller mentioned, is we conduct our elections entirely by mail. Will democracy be able to happen in Oregon if we have no postal service? I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, I think there are two things that are really clear. There should be an agreement by Congress to allow any state to take the option. I don't think you can require it, but to take the option of vote by mail. That's number one. Number two, the whole process of deliberately bankrupting the Postal Service, which was before this a deliberate plan, is terrible. And the third thing I really want to make clear, this was a brilliant idea of Benjamin Franklin, who saw the need for a postal service.
There's no two ways around it.
Are you there? We could be having some technical glitches here, so please, folks, stay tuned.
Hello?
Are you there?
Hello? I'm back.
Oh, I'm so glad. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Yeah, so the question of the Postal Service is literally an existential one for American democracy. Hoping the president, decides to uphold a basic constitutional duty. I don't know. And if he doesn't, what's going to happen? I don't know.
It's important to understand the president never read, for example, the briefings that would have helped him to understand the danger of the coming virus. He doesn't read anything beyond his own little speeches, which are very badly delivered. He doesn't care about anything except himself and his family. He puts Kirchner, for example, in charge. This is a child man. He is absolutely unable to understand the real responsibilities of the gig he has. All he knows is that he is going to get some money out of his real estate because of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a revolting situation. And I wish I had a better answer. I had a better answer for Oregonians than for Americans. We need to move to vote by mail across the country for the November election. I think that is clear to anyone with a functioning brain. Let me add a caveat to that. Anyone with a functioning brain who is actually interested in a functioning democracy.
You have a call.
We have to do something about that.
No, it's really obvious. I don't know that we have any likelihood of that happening because Mitch McConnell controls the Senate. The Senate is in the hands at this moment of a very, not just, it's not about Republicans and Democrats, it's about reactionaries versus progressives in the most profound sense, looking to the future versus fearing the future.
I think that's spot on. And we have a caller.
Zoe.
Good morning.
Zoe.
Good morning.
Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. I want to make a point about the post office. Let's not forget that during the Big Crime Family 43 junta, they forced the post office to fund the retirement program 75 years out. Does anybody remember this?
I remember that.
Yeah, that's the source of the potential bankruptcy of the post office. You're absolutely right.
Yes, and nobody talks about how this came about in the first place. And then let's not forget that when you look at follow the money issues, the properties that are owned by the post office, think of the post offices in downtown New York. How about the one over on Broadway in Portland? These properties are extremely valuable.
They are.
It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that the agenda is much bigger than just, Jeff Bezos is getting a good deal. No. And you can't blame Trump for this. Trump's just an idiot. He's Glover Norquist's wet dream, let's face it. The stupid person who's able to sign his name. Well, this guy does it with Sharpie, He doesn't care about any of that stuff. He is not a politician. He's swamp. That's all he is. And they have found him to be extremely useful, regardless of all the crap that he lays out there. they're still getting their agenda through. They're getting their judges. They're destroying the Constitution. All the stuff. Let's not
get. They've gotten their tax cuts. They've gotten their deregulation. Yeah, you're right. It's been a useful
thing. And even if they lose 4 to 8 years as president, they've already stacked the courts. They've destroyed everything that protects the consumer from the predatory bankers and real estate people. No,
That's really true. That's an important point. The stacking of the court, which is going on every day by the pseudo Republicans, is going to lead to a disastrous reversal of democracy.
And that's the reason that McConnell even brought the Senate back. He wants to push his judges through. It's not about the coronavirus. He's trying to push his judges through. So let's take a step back from the clown in the White House, and let's look at the big picture. And people are just so caught up in the drama of his telemundo everyday, dramatic, that we are just being, I mean, we're watching the front door, and they're hauling everything out the back door. So anyway, for the post office, those people are superheroes. They're out there doing their job every day. I support them 100%. And if it wasn't for them, there are so many small communities in the country that would be absolutely devastated without a post office. So, yay, post office, okay? Anyway, I'm going to get off and let you guys go because you're my buddy. I just love you guys.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
I actually want to add something. With the creation of the rural free delivery system of the post office, which was late in the 19th century, we actually had a way for people to communicate living out in the middle of the plains or something. And that is a brilliant idea, a brilliant thing that is still there. If that's lost, even more isolation, even more cultural unawareness will take place.
Well, that's what might even continue to separate, the rich from everybody else. And it's a sad thing, and the fight is on, and there's a new day coming. We are leaving the age of Pisces and going into the age of Aquarius, and we're in the chaos that is in between. So to me, I'm seeing positive changes. I think people are learning to appreciate their neighbors and they're strengthening themselves. So for me, I just want to go positive on it, and I don't hate Trump. He's a tool. He's here karmically. He's here on purpose to show us just how bad it can get. Because we always thought we were above it. We've been fed so much BS through our entire history, and we're getting to find out that we're no better than any other country, and we're getting ready to have some real shocks. But shocks are good. We need them.
Well, hey, thank you for the call.
Yeah,
really,
and I would add one thing to that: the karmic situation of the United States, and I use karma, not as a religious notion, but as a concept of what's, of retribution, not divine, but logical. The karma of the United States is very, very nasty. And we are now in a situation where that is going to be impacting on our lives. All of the class inequities, all of the racism, all of the sexism of our culture is suddenly coming to the fore in the face of a real crisis where we all need to unite around dealing realistically with an enemy that is not human, and that is vast, and is implacable, and is not going to go away. It's not going to go away.
Yeah, you're right. It's not going to go away. I do have some good news, if you'd like to hear them.
I'd like to hear some good news.
We mentioned earlier how the coronavirus is killing more folks of color per capita than it is white people. This is very, very true amongst Native American communities. The Navajo Nation, for example, is second only to New York and New Jersey in terms of per capita infections. But something very, very interesting happened in the case of all of this. The nation of Ireland got the news that there were some tribes who were particularly hard hit by the coronavirus here in the United States. And as of right now, more than $1.3 million has been raised from Irish nationals making donations to the Choctaw tribe, which now is established in Oklahoma. This is one of the tribes displaced by the Trail of Tears under Andrew Jackson and forced to march west. So they're in Oklahoma now. But back in 1847, during the famous Irish potato famine, the Choctaw tribe got news that Irish people were starving and dying, and they scraped up some money and made a donation to the Irish. They donated, I think it was $150 in 1847. And the Irish people who are making these donations to the Choctaw are doing it in repayment of that centuries-old debt.
That's a beautiful story, man. That's
that is incredible. It's bringing a tear to my eye as I relate it. And that is just remarkable. Here's a guy from Ireland, Michael Corkery, who said, quote, "The Choctaw and Navajo First Nation people helped the Irish during the Great Famine despite their own suffering. When I learned about it, I never forgot it. They know all people are the same in the end and showed such decency and humanity. It's history now, but we are still grateful." That's remarkable.
You have a caller.
All right, let's go to the phones. Good morning.
Ted.
Hi. I just want to say you're absolutely right about the post office. It every effort must be made to save it. But Oregon voters need not despair. The election could be conducted by the convenient drop box. So I think don't despair, Oregonians. The drop box is convenient for another reason. You can decide at the last minute, listen to the debate, be informed, and vote at the last minute. Have your friend take it to the drop box or deliver it yourself.
No, that's true, but I want to again emphasize that Oregon is very proudly a state where you can vote by mail.
Yes, but yeah, if the post office is disrupted, and I hope it isn't, we still have the drop box. Please vote,
yeah, we do.
Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I hear you. And you're right. The Dropbox is an option. The question is, though, if we're still in the midst of a widespread COVID-19 outbreak, will going to the Dropbox be a hazardous undertaking?
I think it could be addressed. We could have 1 meter spacing or something. You know, people drop off out of their cars. You drive by. You know, I use the Dropbox always because I want to vote at the last minute. I want to hear what happens on KBOO in particular to make my decisions. And
I didn't know we had that kind of power.
You do. You're a great thing. Bye.
Hey, thank you for the call. Yes, the Dropbox, it's there. I'm glad. I'm grateful. It's not a perfect solution if the post office were to go away, however.
Yeah, I think having our conversation turn toward the post office emphasizes the degree to which this government, that is the Trump government and the foul Republican Senate, are attempting to destroy the traditional institutions of government in the United States in the interest of a very few powerful and rich people. And it's, by the way, not all the rich, and it's not all the Republicans, but it's a majority of opportunists within that cohort who are doing this. And it's ugly, and it's vicious, and it creates lies and disunion and disorder and disinformation all the time.
Yeah, it really... I really could not think of a worse administration to be at the helm during a crisis of this magnitude. Really, if you were to go to a laboratory and assemble a Franken-president out of all of the worst parts of past presidents, I don't know that you could come up with something as bad as Trump.
And yeah, have you noticed that he's now Trump attempting to distort the situation and make China the bad guy?
Oh well, yeah, that's been going on for some time, almost from the beginning. Yeah, there's a big movement among the conservative commentariat to pin this on China. If only China had fessed up early, we could have taken appropriate early action and prevented all this. It's all on China. We just didn't know. But all of that is contradicted by the record. Everything Trump has said and everything we know now that Trump knew. He had plenty of warning. He knew about this back in December.
You have a caller.
And the fact that, you know, if we had just known more from China, we could have prevented it. You know, maybe under our rational administration, who was willing to be prepared and to be on the front foot when this thing broke out. But no, that's really not what we had. And again, this is totally disproven by everything we know that's on the record. I keep going back to the fact that South Korea and the United States posted their first positive case of COVID-19 on the very same day. And since then, the tales of those two nations could not have diverged more widely. South Korea is now looked at as a model of how best to respond to a situation like this, whereas the United States, of course, now and has for many weeks, the worst COVID-19 outbreak on the planet.
Yeah, and with, and it's important. I think everyone probably listening knows this, but the President of the United States is a congenital liar. He cannot tell the truth. He wants to be on TV. He wants to get his image out there. He thinks he's going to please his crowd. I hope it's not so, but it may be. And he is all about himself and all about pushing a totally irrational or irrational view of what's going on.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. We have some callers standing by. Let's go to the phones.
Barth.
Good morning, gentlemen. Long time no talk. Happy that you're still plugging away at the world in general.
Good to hear your voice.
Another aspect of the post office situation is Nancy Pelosi's husband apparently is part of a large real estate group that is, I think, somewhat actively disposing of postal properties as post offices are shut down, and making lots and lots and lots of money in the process.
I've not heard about that.
I don't know anything about that, but it could be.
Well, this was reported in reliable media probably over a year ago, but I can't quote you a source. Mr. Wizard there can check it out on his computer. In any event, it's a fact that, you know, in some cases, whole blocks of inner city areas and not the ghetto largely are involved with postal properties. And even in small towns, you know, a chunk of Main Street is a postal property. And on a, in some of these properties, not only do you have the real estate value, but you have artwork, large murals, solid structures, close by infrastructure that's been related to that, like highway access and rail access. So these are plum properties. And I think everybody can, you know, extrapolate that on their own, but it's not just the Republicans that are agitating in this way. They're just doing it more coarsely and overtly. On the rest of the scenarios, I haven't heard your whole show, and I'm sorry about that. But apparently America has approximately one-third of the global current reported COVID cases. So demographically, we're not doing very well. And the access to not only healthcare, but just reliable information is so impaired. We're getting nothing but noise out of the president. And half of the noise is covertly blaming others and overtly telling untruths. So I've seen the bumper sticker said, we're screwed 2020. I think that that's the case.
Well, I think you're right. I know, because I have some contacts in Europe directly, that most people in Europe, and these are not ugly people, these are not anti-American people, these are just objective people looking at the situation, what they feel about the U.S. right now is pity. They are pitying us.
Yeah, well, and that's being polite. I mean, I'm sure a lot of them are fearing what's going to come next out of the administration here, and horrified by the fallout from the things that have already happened. One other short take on the Choctaws being supported by the Irish. That is a grand tradition and gesture in both directions. I want to nitpick and say it's not a debt. that they owed, but it is an obligation that they're fulfilling.
No, and I think
that's fair. That's a fair point.
I think you're absolutely right. And I guess I want to just throw out my deepest fear about the crazy Trump world. As he gets cornered, which this virus is, among other things, going to corner him badly because his decision-making process is absolutely flawed, as he gets cornered, he may well turn to the clever device often used of declaring war on somebody for some reason to distract everybody from what's really going on.
Well, yeah, and he's tried to do that already. You know, they're still beating the drum against Iran. They're still beating the drum against several of the countries in South America. And none of this is passive. It's all active. And it's, you know, the push that went on in the last couple of administrations, not so much the very last one, but to get world oil supply funneled toward the United States is kind of backfiring now. And the people that put their, you know, chips in that basket are not going to benefit, at least in the current climate.
Well,
and maybe we'll get less attention for that.
In fact, since you brought that up, one of the more bizarre things is for a long, long time we've argued against, you know, we've said leave it in the ground. We want to transition away from fossil fuels. Ironically, the situation now is that fossil fuels are like a giant weight against our future. And the things that need to be happening to save the planet are not happening in this country at all under this reactionary, old-fashioned, stupid leadership.
True. And the people that are, you know, funneling and pushing the money from place to place are still betting on the wrong horse. So, you know, another, just a quick thought about the person saying using the drop box is good if the postal service is impaired. And that's valid in big cities. But if you live in Baker or Burns, you know, coming into town can be an hour or 2 hours. And then you have, maybe you still have a post office in your town, but maybe not. You know, the drop box is a boon for us in the big cities, but it doesn't really account for the rest of the state. And the rest of the state is largely thinking much more conservatively than the Portland area. So they deserve a voice.
You're right. It's an imperfect solution, the Dropbox.
Thank you. So, good day.
Hey, listen, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
You have another call.
Before we get to our next caller, let me follow up on the previous caller's comment. It was, in fact, Dianne Feinstein's husband, not Nancy Pelosi's husband, who leads a company that is brokering the sale of former postal properties. That's thanks to Roger, listener Roger, who wrote in on that. I did a little fact-checking. It turns out that, yes, Feinstein's husband does run this company that is doing the brokering. He did not, or the company did not get a no-bid contract, as some people have alleged. And apparently, there isn't any evidence supporting the claim that Feinstein's husband company got the contract due to his wife's influence. No evidence, perhaps, but it's hard to imagine that that influence isn't actually there. And I think this reveals a structural flaw in how we do things. If you are married to a senator, then you should be barred from entering into any contractual arrangements regarding federal properties of any kind. That should have been out of bounds for her husband.
Well, I really think that the tradition of, in the case of the presidency, but should be extended to the Senate and even the House, should be that everybody puts their money in a blind trust and then goes ahead with their lives, not being influenced by that money.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, that's an antiquity now. That's something left in the past. Let's try to get one more call in before the end here, shall we?
Yeah.
Oh, Jim. Nope, lost him. Okay. Well, we are more or less out of time anyhow.
We really are. Listen, I am really glad that K cable is able to put this together. I know it's a little funky, and I know people have to be patient. I hope they are being patient. This is a serious struggle that will go on for a long time because, unfortunately, the virus, it's like I have an old folk song in my mind. The cannonball pays no mind to if you're good or if you're kind. The physics of it, the biology of it, is indifferent to human stupidity, and human stupidity is the dominant force of the current administration.
I think that's probably a good place to end things today.
Okay.
Well, you know, because you're right. You just encapsulated the situation. I don't know that we can add any more to that particular discussion today. But I would tell our listeners before we sign off, there are things you can do. There are things you can do that are within your control. You can control your own behavior. You can try to influence the behavior of others. And you can reach out to loved ones for support, and you can support them in turn. And that's something I think all of us need to do right now.
And you can give money now, because this is the Tuesday to do it.
That's right. You can give money to KABU, a little, you know, retail therapy. That'll help.
Oh, you can give it to any charity. KABU is one of the most needy and most worthy.
But yeah, you can give it to any charity, but KABU is a better choice.
Okay.
That's what I'm here to say.
I'll go with that.
So thanks to everybody for tuning in today. This has been the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. Please, if you can, make a contribution to KABU today. And we'll be back at you from the bunkers next week.
Yeah, see you all, and stay home, stay calm, stay helpful, stay compassionate, and stay strong.
Absolutely. Talk to you later.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m. We're also at K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
With requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public